But our guest tonight, just off of Coast to Coast AM, here beginning of the month, his name is Bob Fletcher. Now, if you don't know who Bob Fletcher is, he's a businessman, investigator, film producer, radio personality, author, federal witness, whistleblower, and above all, patriot. Now, his story is amazing. He's got an amazing story. I was reading about Bob Fletcher all, well, not all day, but I read the interviews and read his background. And Bob was on with Steve Quayle, several weeks ago, I think it was. It was maybe the end of January? I'm not exactly sure.
He was on in February, I believe.
Okay, all right. But Bob is running solo tonight, and he's going to provide us a very critical update about the threats that we're facing right now. And I have a feeling we're going to be talking about a lot of things, and he's agreed to stay with us for a couple of hours, and we just thank him for his gracious gift of time.
One of the things that he spoke about on Coast to Coast, and when we talked to set up this interview, he mentioned wanting to discuss is something that the audience, even though it has not been a subject, something that we've focused on mainly really with any guests, but we continue to receive a lot of correspondence and people asking us if we would talk about Planet X or Nibiru, and Bob's going to speak on that tonight. So
that's right.
You know, any questions, you can send them to our email, go to our website, and shoot us an email via our website, and we will try to get those questions asked on air with Mr. Fletcher.
Right, HagmanHagman.com. Click on the contact us, and that goes right to the studio, and we'll be able to just fill out the email dialog box that opens up, and we get that right in the studio. It's kind of like a fast blast. One thing that caught my attention with Mr. Fletcher in his about page is the paragraph that he writes. He said, you know, and he writes that, you've got to be careful. You really have to, you know, the internet is interesting, isn't it? You've got so many opinions, so many viewpoints, contradictory information. He writes that, I do request that you, as an internet participant, be aware of the sources of information on blogs in general. Scrutinize the material printed and look for documentation, because many well-meaning persons take a small part of someone else's story. They repeat it out of context, add a little of their own, and then they print it. Now, that does as much harm as an intentionally false informational release will do, and we've seen this happen. So Bob, in his investigative experience, speaking before the Senate Intelligence Committee, becoming involved with numerous other groups, having the experience, life experience he has, he knows what he talks about. So with all of that said, welcome Bob Fletcher from BobFletcherInvestigations.com. Bob, welcome to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, guys. It's good to be back. And what you just said is real important. When I got into this last investigation that I did, I had to be really cautious because, number one, it was it led me down a path that was very strange to me, and I was very hesitant as to whether I wanted to seriously get into doing a whole inquiry myself, an investigation. And as you mentioned, I kind of got into this really rather strangely in terms of doing the inquiry and, well, actually becoming a federal witness in the Iran-Contra investigations many years ago in the 80s, which was probably one of the most corrupted activities that our government was carrying out, because it involved everything that you could imagine that would make you sick to your stomach, particularly thinking and realizing, as it was actually at least partially shown in public, and that is the fact that the criminality involved at that time with the Iran-Contra inquiries and what led up to it came directly from the president and the vice president and the head of the CIA at the very highest levels of our government, and what it involved, which I'm not going to get into all now at this point in time, but just to quickly give you a sample of that, what I'm talking about is the illegal shipment of weapons into an area that had already been congressionally restricted to where generally it was not. We were not to be supporting and shipping arms. The administration at that time, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and Bill Casey of the CIA, decided the heck with the Congress and the Senate, and they bypassed them and went ahead and continued to supply weapons into Nicaragua. But it also meant trading with Iran at the same time with illegal weapons, again, that were not supposed to get into Iran either at that time. These guys were obviously posted as an enemy of the state. They were not supposed to be being dealt with at that time. We were withholding about 27 jet airplanes that belonged to them, technically, that we had held for many years since 1979 and 1980. So it was a serious situation when individuals at the high level of government decide that they're going to bypass the Senate and the Congress and do what they wanted to. But then it also included assassinations of individuals specifically targeted. It involved training mercenaries in the United States of America to go back to other countries in large scale to be involved with the fighting. It involved weapons that weren't supposed to go. And then it involved, which was the worst of it, and that was narcotics being brought back on swap. We were swapping at the highest levels of our government. We were swapping weapons that were going to places they were not to go, and we were flying on the same airplanes and aircraft. We were loading them up with narcotics and flying them back, offloading them at our Air Force bases, and then distributing through some of the biggest drug operatives in the United States, in the world, as a matter of fact, at that time, and distributing the drugs to kill our own children here in the United States. I can't imagine how more egregious a nation can become when their president, vice president, and everybody that they're partnered up with are carrying out those kinds of acts. That was what got Bob Fletcher into the mess that I've gotten into for the last 30 years. And again, I ended up being a deposed witness. I was involved with the Iran-Contra inquiries, which then spread out almost like a fungus among our high level of government, because the persons that are involved, these specialty intelligence operatives, these guys that are involved with this, have been involved since the Vietnam War. They were the guys that ran the war. They were the people that ran and continued that war going over there. And they were dealing with, they were the ones that ran Air America, which everybody knows, may be familiar with a movie by, what was his name, the Australian fella. Air America was the name of the movie, and it was very accurate, showing how our government was involved during the entire Vietnam War, including shipping drugs in the coffins of some of our dead soldiers. And we're going to talk about how low can you go. Okay, so when I became involved, and it was best, had nothing to do with anything. I was simply put into a situation where I merged a simple company I owned in Atlanta, Georgia. I merged it with the company, and those guys were the people that I've just described. They were the military generals that were in and out of my toy company. I made toys, manufactured toys and novelties. They were using the intent of that. Because a lot of people say, well, why would they merge with that company if I wasn't a gun company or something like that? The bottom line was that they were using it and had the intent to use it as a covert front, and they were using many, many companies of just regular businesses that they would swallow up, merge them with other fraudulent company corporations, and use them as front operations to be able to travel to different nations. And how unimportant would the guy that was traveling as a buyer of toys for manufacturing or distribution in the United States, nobody would look twice at somebody like that. So it was being used as a covert front, and that was how we got involved.
Now, yeah, that was unwitting on your part, that merger.
Sure.
I was reading about this, and just to be clear to the audience, you did not know. I mean, you didn't know when you merged
I had no idea. The way it progressed, it was a simple thing out in front, a business deal, good deal for me. They had obviously had a lot of money. I didn't know where it was coming from. The gentleman that was in charge of that operation, name was Gary Best, and he owned several companies under one name. He utilized the name Vista Distribution USA, and under that he would buy companies, and they would become Vista Distribution USA, and then whatever the company was. And one later on, he stole a $13 million oil company from a guy in Texas, the same as he did with my business. And he utilized also, it was important because they were able to bounce money back and forth between these corporate entities by utilizing just the first three names of the company. Vista USA was all he had to put on, for example, checking accounts, et cetera, and they could bounce money back and forth. But that was the least of their problems. They simply were using my company and other companies as a fraudulent front. In my case, they had intention to fully recruit me, which they attempted to do. And that final recruitment was at the point in time over a couple of months after watching what was going on and meeting military generals who I didn't know who they were originally until I looked them up and found out they were the guys that ran the entire Vietnam War, General Singlob, General Adderholt, Richard Secord, and, of course, Oliver North, who became famous, et cetera, et cetera. But they had run the war in Vietnam, and they were still running, and what they called suppliers of weapons or suppliers of power for all of the miscellaneous wars that we fight all around the globe on a regular basis to make people rich and kill people. We really need to move forward, or I run out of time.
Yes,
unfortunately.
Sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
What happened was, from that point forward, I got involved with many, many, many congressional and Senate inquiries, and guys up there. The few of them, some of them are doing things on their own. Half of what gets accomplished by the Senate and the Congress is done on the basis that they're looking to move themselves individually forward, either in power positions in Washington or to increase the size of their wallets. Very little is done up there actually for you and I or anybody else in the country, unless you're going to benefit them or they're going to get a benefit from whatever they're doing. But there are a few of them that would roll down the pipe every once in a while that were what I call fairly honest or good guys. There are not too many of them up there, I have to say. A lot of the good guys either are killed, like Congressman Sonny Bono was killed on the top of the ski slopes and made to look like it was an accident. Several of them have been blown up in airplanes to make it look like accidents, some of them in car accidents, et cetera, and some of them commit suicide by stabbing themselves in the back twice or shooting themselves two times in the face with a pistol, and which, of course, are ridiculous, kind of a summary on a person that committed suicide to say they shot themselves twice. That doesn't happen. But to move on, what had taken place was every time in Washington there, starting in the 80s, when they were getting into inquiries of drugs and arms and things of that related, I would get a phone call, or I would visit Washington, and somebody would say, I want you to meet somebody. We're looking into this. Because they would simply say, does this name and that name and this name, are any of those people familiar to you in your past investigations of the other two, three, or four, or five things you've done? So it got to be where I was kind of a go-to guy. I was not wandering around up in Washington much, but I had, in fact, everybody you could imagine at every level coming to me. I would receive a phone call or a transmission of some sort, communication, and somebody would say, we're looking into this and we're looking into that. Can you help us out? So I ended up being involved in about 8 or 9 major inquiries, and many, which was, I got a big laugh out of it, many of the inquiries were top secret or classified as being secret at the congressional and senatorial level, even including at the Intelligence Committee level. And they would ask me if I had information, and when I would end up supplying them with typically unbelievable documentation. For example, I retrieved very early in the 1980s everything out of Oliver North's office. I had all of his personal transmissions that he thought had been erased from his computer. I had the entire transmissions, even including duplicates of his personal handwritten notebooks, which talked about supplying an aircraft to cocaine. Anyhow, and that's in his handwriting.
I suspect Ollie wasn't too happy with you.
Well, probably not, although we only talked once or twice at that time. But there had been 3 specific attempts to kill me over the last 30 years. That has happened. Okay, now to move, and they succeeded in putting me into a condition where I'm pretty well crippled up, so I had not been able to do what I call live appearances for at least 15 years, and I am disabled from that particular event. But what took place after doing all of these inquiries and investigations that I was involved with, I selectively picked some of the best, and I did reports on a DVD, well, originally on VHS and on DVD form, so that people in the country could get copies of them and go over some of the inside information that I had seen and been exposed to. But a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, I started realizing, because I had people contact me, and they said, several people were saying, Where is all this money disappearing? Do you have the opportunity, Mr. Fletcher, to look into this particular vanishing of money, or what's happening with this, or how did this money disappear from here, and where is it going? And I looked at enough of it, and I realized that we weren't no longer talking millions of dollars. We weren't even talking billions of dollars. We were talking trillions of dollars with a T over 6, 8, 10 year period of time, but nonetheless it was trillions and billions vanishing, some of it vanishing from budgets up there in Washington, that, for example, the defense budget. Mr. Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld, the head of the Defense Department a few years back, announced on the floor of the Congress that he was unable to find $2.3 trillion out of his budget. It had disappeared. He made that announcement the day before the 9/11, the 9/11, the 9/11 terrorist event. So when he made that statement before the United States Congress, and no one even had a good chance to follow up, because from the 9/11 forward, we obviously were totally occupied with that. So that was the end of an unbelievable admission. You know, we're talking more money than you could money launder, even if you were Pablo Escobar or one of the big shots in the drug smuggling operations, or Barry Seal, who was a close friend with Bill Clinton during his governorship, so close that his brother, Bill Clinton's brother, which we have on videotape, was snorting a line of cocaine gotten through Barry Seal, who was a drug smuggler in Arkansas, one of the biggest, Bill Clinton's brother, Roger, snorted a line of cocaine and said, I got to get some of this for my brother, Bill, because he's got a nose like a vacuum cleaner. Now, had anybody known about that? Well, I got to back up, because people are now getting, and excuse me for saying this, people are getting so stupid now they still would have voted for him. Okay, but nonetheless, this particular Barry Seal, who, by the way, was also involved with the CIA and this huge drug smuggling operation out of Arkansas for many years, was completely covered by Bill Clinton when he was in the governorship, including assisting, paying for one of his bail, making bail for one time when Barry Seal was in prison. So that'll give you an idea of how close they were.
Very familiar with him. I'm very familiar with Barry Seal.
There's a lot more than that than people are aware of. Okay, so I looked at, we get back to the vanishing money. I realized a lady came forward who was in charge of auditing some of the money with the Federal Reserve, and she was questioned by the Congress as to how $9 trillion disappeared and was unaccounted for at the Federal Reserve. Then our good friend Ron Paul comes forward and he says, we need to have an audit of the gold at Fort Knox. Of course, he was told to go take a hike. And then there were several other people that had requested to get an audit of the gold, because the bottom line was the belief at the very highest level of international banking is that the gold is all gone from Fort Knox. So by the time you start adding up multi billions and then a few trillion, and then you realize the gold is more than likely absolutely gone, because people that own it, some of the gold, foreign nations, requested to have some of their gold, pull it out back in 2011, 2008, 9, 10, that time when the money was real bad overseas. These other nations like Germany and five other countries came forward and they said, we have 1,000 tons of gold on account laying in your vaults at the Fort Knox. We have them on deposit there for safekeeping. We need some of that gold. And the Federal Reserve, Fort Knox, denied them their money. Told them, in 2020, we can probably get you some of it, and or at least maybe an up-to-date audit on the value of the gold that's here. But don't bother us for about 6 or 7 years. And that was back in 2013. Okay, so I then started, I sat back and I said, wait a minute, because I had seen multi-millions of dollars fraudulently transferred here, there, and everywhere, being money laundered even by our presidents that happened to be in the oil business and taking money offshore that was dirty money, putting it on an account offshore, borrowing money back here in the United States, $10-13 million, $20 million at a time, using the offshore accounts as collateral, and then in 2 years paying off the $20 million that was in the United States borrowed for their oil company, paying it off by having the certified funds from overseas simply cover it. See, now you can't do that as a business person. In America, if you're an average guy, you can't take that kind of money and money launder it. That's what they were doing, $20 million to aid in the expansion of one of your oil companies. But the president of the United States was able to get away with that. So when I started looking at the whole picture, I realized it was more money than commonly would be stolen by these guys so they could build, let's say, a new chalet for themselves in the Alps or some kind of a holiday resort down in Jamaica with some of the stolen millions. It was way too much money. I realized then, because I had been bombarded again with people saying, what's the deal with underground locations, underground facilities all over the United States? What's going on with that? Are we about to have a nuclear war? Why have they all of a sudden, since 1983 and 85, expanded continuity of government programs to build secret underground facilities, but not just a little cubby hole? We're talking extraordinary, large acres and miles of underground facilities in the United States. So then it all of a sudden hit. That's where the money's gone. That's where this kind of fraudulent funding and this stolen money, that's where it could go. You could certainly spend trillions of dollars if you're building over 103 underground facilities in the United States. And I had first seen some of that. I had seen some of that back in the 90s, believe it or not. About 94, I think, was the first time that I had received photos and live footage of these underground operations. And they were smuggled out, pictures that were originally smuggled out and sent to me to look into it. But at that time, I was involved with so many different, very serious different inquiries that I just had to put it on the back burner, you know, put it on the back shelf because I just couldn't get into it properly. But I did already have some of it. And when someone told me that the Denver Airport, which at that time was just about to be opened, that was in 95, and I had already had all kinds of rumors about it. So I had a friend of mine and myself, I think it was the first week of the opening of that airport, we went in and we were able to sneak down inside and get on a construction tram, a little train that was running around down underground. And we got on and went in and ran around in several positions down there and found, sure enough, there's a huge underground sprawling operation beneath the airport. Now, that's way back in 94. But again, in 95, which actually was when it opened. Of course, they've denied that. But since then, it's interesting, they are still under construction. This is mind-boggling. All right, because it's with 2015, and it was originally constructed for completion in 95. Okay, so I did more and more snooping. I opened my doors to people that I had kind of stood down from, and I said, you know, get me some information. Let me look at this. And when I realized that we had all of these underground facilities, and again, I cannot express how big they are. They are constructed by multiple heads, drilling operations so big that you drill into the underneath a mountain or into the side of the mountain or down under like a mole. You can go in one time with a drill, back out of it, and drive an 18-wheeler through the hole that you just made. Now they are so big they utilize double and triple head drills, so that you actually go in with that equipment, go in, drill a hole, back out, and drive two 18-wheelers next to each other. They have underground high-speed magnetic levitated trains that travel approximately 400 miles an hour, interconnecting several of the underground facilities. And I won't go in to say, but some of the facilities are built and designed exclusively to grow foodstuffs. And some of them, of course, they're interconnected underground. I've talked to 18-wheeler drivers, truck drivers, that claim they had gone in like in Texas underground and come up in Tennessee, driving completely underground without seeing daylight at all. That's how big these operations are. So the big question then, obviously, is, and I have to throw this in too, they had during this period of time at the highest levels of government. They completely changed gigantic funding. In other words, operations like part of the NASA, the space programs and all of that, they were all completely altered and changed. Most all of it's been moved out from NASA, as a matter of fact, for the most part, and been privatized. We have space stations and what have you in outer space that have nothing to do with NASA, unless there's some overlap. But for the most part, there are privatized space programs. They changed all of that in the 80s to where things were just disappeared. The things they were going to do, they just stopped doing. And by the way, this started about 83. And in 1983 was when the first serious successful launching of an infrared telescope of high power was pushed out into outer space to go out far enough to see things, particularly things that were infrared and were not visible by common telescopes, because they also didn't generate their own light, not their own illumination, obviously, like the sun. And when they're out there that far, you just can't see them without looking with infrared. In 83, we put a huge telescope out, first time, and apparently it was successful. And what had happened was they came back, and somebody in around 83, came into Ronald Reagan and George Bush and said, "We got bad news. That mystical planet X, called Nibiru, or whatever you want to call it, has multiple names. It's out there, and it's coming back in." And we have, and of course, the first response on that kind of a thing would be, when are you talking about? Do we have, are you talking about 50, 100 years? And the response was no. It was probably going to be about 25 years, the possibility of it returning. So at that point in time, and by the way, that was the time when Ronald Reagan went on the floor of the United Nations with a curious speech that he made when he said, in fact, "I wonder if all of us here at the United Nations, all the nations of the world, how we would come together if we finally realized that there was an alien," and I think he used a strange term, an alien element that was coming in that would cause us to all become friends and stop wars between each other if we knew an alien, and I'm not sure what the term was. I should know it, but I don't. It was something like an alien entity or something like that. Not necessarily meaning aliens themselves, although maybe he was. But nonetheless, that's when he made that speech in 1983 on the floor of the United Nations. So I started looking more because I figured that's it. There's something coming in that's scared these guys so badly. There's no longer stealing $20 million a month to line their pockets, and that's all been put aside now. All of a sudden, they're scared of something big enough to make them dig holes and create these survival operations underground for themselves and, of course, their families. And that is where the money would go, all right? So I got into my investigations on Planet X and Nibiru, and I never would have done it if it hadn't been all of this coming around to where it was actually the only logical thing that would have caused this multitude of strange changes, and again, the vanishing of all this money. And bearing in mind, it's all these little incremental things that started happening around the same time. One thing, if somebody can tell me the last time they saw serious federal money repairing any of the infrastructure of the United States of America, please let me know where it is. Because we have bridges, electronic transmission generators and wires and equipment, roadways, underground, underwater tunnels that millions of our vehicles are using every day going in and out of, for example, New York City, and the bridges across America, they're all 75 to 110 years old, and we are fixing none of them. They're not, I mean, they fix them once in a while. Some guy will go over a bridge and fall into the water, and they go in and patch it. The infrastructure of the United States is like it's not even on our budget at all. Nothing's happening with that. Obviously unto itself, it's a stupid, disastrous concept, but it's not so stupid and disastrous if, in fact, you think something's going to come in that's going to bypass all of that to where we're not going to need bridges between New Jersey and New York if, in fact, we're going to get hit by some kind of an extraterrestrial calamity, a disaster. And that's apparently what they're afraid of. So I went in, I started working on it. My report on it is extremely complete. Because I was asking questions of myself. Where does the church fit into this? What is the Catholic Church? Where is the Pope and all of that? Where are they involved? Do they know about this? Are they being bypassed? And what I discovered, to my surprise, they're not only are they aware of it, but the Vatican, built an infrared telescope, Arizona, which they funded, etc., and it's called Lucifer. Now, that's a little strange for the Pope and the Vatican to title their infrared telescope Lucifer. But to my surprise, they have, in fact, been involved, and they're completely aware of what is the potential returning of Nibiru, which, again, is a planet that's almost been turned into a fanciful kind of a thing for years. They always denied it. It had been discovered by several professional astronomers, many of which have been killed. Amazingly, surprisingly enough, surprising to some people, not to myself, actually eliminated. One fellow, Robert Harrington, back in the 90s, looked for 10 years for that particular potential planet. And when he discovered it, sufficiently for him, and by the way, Dr. Harrington was in fact running the planetarium, or the, I guess that's the right terminology, for the United States Navy. And he discovered what he believed to be Planet X coming in from way out in out past what's called the Oort cloud, way out by Pluto, past Pluto, and coming back in. When he realized it, he got together with a guy named Dr. Sitchin, who had, in fact, translated all of the clay tablets from Sumeria, 4,000-year-old tablets that describe the story of Nibiru, the 10th planet, coming in, back in, on a huge orbital circle of approximately 3,600 years and going way out the farthest reaches of space of our immediate solar system, and then coming back again to go around the sun and then go back out. The same as the comets like Halley's Comet, which, by the way, is only a 75-year orbit. And that was a problem for me also. I'm not an astronomer, but I was tapping into people that have been studying this thing for their whole lifetime. And I was concerned because originally I thought they're talking about 3,000-year potential orbit. And I thought, that's stupid. That's way far out. It would never maintain an orbit going out that far and then coming back around the sun. That seemed really stupid to me. Again, not being an astronomer at all. But when I found out and looked into it, lo and behold, we had what is called the Hale-Bopp comet, which is bigger bigger than Halley's Comet. It is not a planet. It is a comet, which means it's frozen space dust and what have you, and flying around. But its orbit is actually 4,200 years. So the idea that 3,600 was too long, I was wrong, obviously, since they know about the Hale-Bopp comet, which came around a few years back and will not be visiting again for 4,000 years. So the idea that it was too long to be a real orbiting body in space, that I was wrong. It absolutely is not beyond the realm of possibilities. So let me briefly stop here and ask you guys, I'm going to take a drink of water. And if you have a question, let me know. If you want me to go in any specific direction, I will try to cover as much as I can this evening. But if you have a question or two, please speak up, guys.
All right. Yeah, it's great. Please take a drink of water. Joe, go ahead. You were going to say something.
Yeah. About Nibiru, Planet X, we've seen, and this is after years of doing research, claims from people who post videos.
They're all over the board.
Right. We see people posting videos saying that they've captured Nibiru. You know, there's two suns, one sun, you know, rising before the actual sun, from places like Hawaii, Antarctica, or the North Pole. Has there been any irrefutable evidence showing that Nibiru is actually has been located with coordinates and is visible somehow?
All right. For the most part, at this point in time, the only pictures that would be realistic at this point in time would be those held by NASA and at the highest levels of of the what I call the corrupted government. The idea of seeing it now is not likely at all. It's too far out still as we speak. And number one, it pretty much requires an infrared camera and a heck of a telescope, all right? So for the most part, I'm afraid the bulk of pictures, I put in my DVD, my report, I put a few pictures, one or two that might possibly have been snuck out, so to speak. But for the most part, you can't go out in the backyard and see it, this evening. And there's other parts to that, too. Those of us who remember just 2 years ago, well, maybe longer than that at this point in time, remember when the Russians had the had that meteorite that came in and came through the atmosphere and crashed down and blew windows out all over Moscow, Russia, and all that? Okay. And what was interesting, that was on the same day of another meteor that came by and passed. Now, we knew about the one that was to come by, and it just came by. It didn't have any effect on anything. It was too far out and did not affect anything. But this one that crashed to Earth, when NASA was asked by the Congress, why did we not know that was coming? What happened? Nobody knew that was even coming in, all right? It was no heads up any place on that. And the guy on NASA said, from NASA, said it basically came like from behind or the direction of the sun, and we couldn't see it. You can't look at the sun and see something like that. If it's coming that closely from your vantage point being aimed towards the sun, obviously, if they're not looking for it, et cetera, you know. You got to remember, these things are traveling at unbelievable miles per hour coming in. And if you haven't tracked it from way out, now you just would never know it was coming in. And that was his answer. Now, he had a next question, as a matter of fact, to him. And they said, if something that was a lot bigger was coming in and we didn't know about it until a few days ahead of time, what would we do? And he hesitated for a minute, and he said, pray.
Yeah, Correct.
You know, and being the head of NASA, I thought that was rather rather a heavy duty response to that. As a matter of fact,
okay.
But that being that's really a reality. But there's something else I wanted to point out in terms of the potential of visually seeing it. You would have to know. There's a question. There's kind of a debate between particularly two groups of thought on this, and both of them who've been studying this, you know, for, like I said, they're like 30 years, their entire adult lives, and all of their information is put together for me to put together the report that I have, which covers every possible question you could come up, by the way, is covered in there. The idea is, the question and problem between two groups is, one group thinks that it will be coming in on what you would call the plane of the ecliptic, which is the plane that our planets, all nine planets, pretty much circle the Earth on. Again, if you put your arm out, straight out to the right of you, and you say that's the plane of the ecliptic. And there's a second group saying that they think it may be coming in from as much as 30 degrees below our plane and coming up and down, up from if you put your arm out and went down about 12 inches, that would represent about 30 degrees of an angle. And there's a group that says they're positive it's coming in from that direction. And when it comes in, it will come up and go around the sun and go back out, but it will not be directly on the same plane that the rest of our planets are on. If the case difference there doesn't amount to much, it makes a slight amount of difference of when and where and how long, so to speak. But something we don't think about unless you're like really into astronomy. You know, the average guy goes out in his backyard and he looks up and he says, "Well, I don't see anything strange." You know, well, you're looking at such a minute slice of the atmosphere, such a small slice of space from wherever your backyard is. If you're not on the right side of the Earth at the right side of the time, with the sun on the right place and location, and you're not looking exactly where this is supposed to be, be it up, down, left, right, in the middle, or wherever, you know, the chances of you finding it is very hard. Now, it was interesting. There was what was a telescopic discovery by a couple of people a while back in looking up at outer space in an area where they perceived this might be coming from the planet X. And when they zeroed it in and photographed it over a period of time, this little dot on the screen, photographed it a few sequences, it was in fact moving. So it was believed that might be it, okay, when you were asking about possible photographs. Now, that was on Google Space. It was posted on Google Space for 2 days. And the guy put it up and he said, "Hey, go on YouTube." He said, "Go to this. Here's a picture I've taken through the telescope. Go to this location." And he gave what would be the geographical location in the sky, the astronomical address for this thing. Okay, so many minutes north, so many minutes south, etc. And you could go up and see it for about 2 days. Then, son of a gun, Google Space, for some reason, under somebody's orders, obviously, when you went up, it was a postcard-size black square that no longer permitted you to visually see it. So for whatever that was worth, it was kind of interesting because it means somebody was worried enough to request that it would be removed from general public's vision. All right. Now, to get now to the best studies on this thing, the things that makes it not just a maybe if kind of a thing. You had the first reports of this, some of the best of them, from Dr. Sitchin's writings, deciphering these clay tablets that were 4,000 years old. Now, what they did was describe this huge element. They didn't have any idea, obviously, what it was. Some of them did, but I don't want to get into that part of it. But they described this huge thing that was going to come in and pass around close and cause problems and then fly back out. You move forward, and there's a couple of people that have done extraordinary investigations on this, and my hat's off to one fellow's name is Broussard. Gil Broussard has done what I would consider to be some of the very best really in-depth study on this, and he got very much on into the religious side of it, because it's all described in the Bible. All right, it's called wormwood, and in the Revelations, it describes verbatim what will take place when wormwood returns and comes back around to pass around the sun and go back out. The biblical part of it is mind-boggling. Now, Gil Broussard went in, he studied all of the biblical scriptures. Then, to match up with it, he went to China and spent time actually in China, where he looked up all the old scriptures in China that indicates back that in the year 1050, approximately, that the Nibiru had passed around the sun and back out again, and was literally written down on a day-by-day description in the Chinese emperor's astronomer's books, the scriptures going back that far back. And they watched this thing come in and go around and come back out. And they did it like it was their writings were like every 3 days or every 2 days, marking where it was in the heavens as it came in. They called it the visiting dragon. And their scriptures also indicated that it was coming back again. Now, Gil Broussard's belief is that it is not on a 3,600-year cycle, on an orbit of 3,600 years. His feeling is, by his studies and the fact that it has come around every 350 to 360 years. Now, and part of the problem or the disagreement is relative to an interesting fact, and that is when literally a zero figure in numbers, when the zero started to be used in ancient time as a number, it was not originally used. They would use multiples of numbers to come up, let's say, with a thousand years, they would say 100 years times 10. So they didn't for some reason put in that extra zero. It was not done until later in history. So therein, when translating the clay tablets from Sumeria, translating them, they actually may have screwed up by adding one zero. So as opposed to being a 3,600 year, it, according to Gil Broussard, it's more likely a 350 or a 360 year, 350 year cycle. Now, that doesn't make any difference to you and I on Earth today. The point being that if, in fact, it only came around once in 3,600, or if it came around 10 times in that period of time, it doesn't make any difference. Our concern is, when is it going to be due back to come around the sun one more time and head back out? And if it's if it was 360 years ago, if that was the last time, well, then that was the last time. That would mean in 720-something years, it would have made two passes. And in a varying degree, depending on its effect each time it came around, would be relative to how badly it would affect us in the coming return. All right? So, but the bottom line being 350, 60 years ago, or 3,000, it doesn't make any difference to you and I. It's a matter of when is it coming. Now, Gil Broussard's work is so good. I really had to take my hat off to him, because he didn't just take two or three scriptural descriptions of it. All right, he's gone in, which I have followed in his path, actually following his material and other people's, because, again, I'm not an astronomer. But his bottom line is he can show where the Earth changes and Earth effects and the destructions and the floods and the meteor showers, the bombardment of meteors and all of these things, and also a 26-degree shift on our axis when it comes around. And he's cross-verified all of that with Chinese, with the Tibetan writings and others, and myself. Likewise, I've gone in and chased after the scriptural descriptions of these things. And it's absolutely, in my opinion, that this exists, and it will be coming back around reasonably soon. And we will have somewhat of a notice, an advance notice. Now, let me get back to some of the tangible,
Mr. Fletcher,
physical. Sure, yes, sir. Go ahead.
This is a great place to stop for a moment, as we're up against the top of the hour break.
Sure.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
so
good
far.
Cliffhanger. Okay.
Yeah. 3,600 years, regardless of its orbital path,
or 360 or whatever.
Coming back around. And we have some questions of our own we want to get into and hear the rest of your explanation on the other side. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. Our guest is Mr. Bob Fletcher. Mr. Bob Fletcher recently appeared on Coast to Coast. He was with us, joined with us with Steve Quayle, and he'll be back with us on the other side. Stay with us. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of this Wednesday edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. Our guest tonight, Mr. Bob Fletcher. His website, BobFletcherInvestigations.com. He is here talking with us about a number of things, and we were left off talking about Planet X, or Nibiru. And Mr. Fletcher, I'll turn it back over to you and let you pick up right where you left off.
Okay, good. I want to, again, touch at least briefly on, because we can't do it all, but and by the way, the DVD report that I've finished, which is available to everyone, I'd like to get some of our friends that are not necessarily online with computers on a regular basis, some of my older buddies. I want to make sure I give you guys an address so you can drop me a note if you don't have the ability to simply go on a computer. I'm going to give you my address here. Everybody grab up a pencil and paper, and I'll get back to that in a few minutes and let you guys know. But the DVD is 4 hours. It's a double DVD. It's two DVDs together in a package. Unfortunately, it ended up having to be that way. I actually cut out of it and edited back a lot. But I wanted to be able to completely cover all the different aspects of the potential questions. If somebody says, oh, gee, but how does that fit into this? And what would they do with that? And how are they going to do this? And all the rest of that. Because there are some real tricks for the bad guys in government keeping this secret, obviously. And I want to cover even some of that, too, in a little bit. And if we have to, I don't know what your schedules are today for your on your programming. If I have to, I can probably hang in maybe another extra 30 minutes if that's available. But whatever, it's not necessary. We can do what we can in the 2 hours here.
You've got an open invitation, sir, and you just don't worry about it. Let's rock and roll. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, fine. That's great. All right, so Let me get back to some of the other, and I'll get back to the scientific part of and some more of that, so to speak, in a bit as necessary. But let me show you some of the other bits that I put together on this. Like I say, I looked into the church part of it, or at least the Catholics, since they're just so wealthy and so large. I was curious. And if everybody will notice or be aware, lately the church has come back out again with this talking about aliens, and if in fact aliens were all of a sudden officially declared or they came down and landed in our backyard, that the Catholic Church would be glad to bring them into the church. And boy, that's something that would never... Yeah, that would never. 100 years ago, they would have taken him out and tied him fast to a cooking stick or something, because then he'd been in bad trouble. But see, this is a sort of a slow introduction to some of just the changes of what's going on with talking about interplanetary things, particularly even with the Vatican. At the church level. But when I to get back to snooping back to what else has been going on that fits into this whole situation of the bad guys in government, and I say that only because that's what we've got now, unfortunately. I believe corruption has taken over the entire government. We have nobody to vote for except those few criminals that they have already predestined to take over the presidency. So we're kind of, it puts us in a too darn bad situation. If you don't like it, don't vote. And that's where they are with us now. But I started looking into, again, we were talking about the extravagant size. There is apparently 103 underground facilities in the United States that are being prepared to be utilized as survival locations for the limited few, okay? Some of them are big enough to handle 10,000 people underground for a given period of time. They are and have been and continued for the last 10 years putting in freeze-dried and or survival foods. The foodstuffs come in on trains and on 18-wheelers by the tons, and they have been doing it every day for years in terms of supplying these underground facilities. They have been training and expanding the military arm in the United States. For several years now, these variety of bureaucratic operations that fall under what we will call Homeland Security, that's the same name Adolf Hitler used for his operations when he started them back in the 30s and early 40s. All right, all of these bureaucratic associated operations, that includes the Forestry Service and health organizations, the CDC, and all of these, the IRS, have all been ordering under their mandates, their paperwork, billions of bullets, thousands of weapons, automatic weapons, and every conceivable riot control kind of a weapon or military weapon with enough bullets and weapons in the hands of the bureaucracies today to fight about two entire wars on the face of the earth. But they're not going to fight wars. They are being put in line, in place, as a riot control configuration for the United States of American civilians. All right, now that includes the transfers since the 90s. Like I said, when I found out some of this information, but I couldn't connect all the dots until recently, couldn't figure out what in the world the application was for so much of this. But they started in the 90s with these deals for the police and sheriff all around the United States where they said, hey, how would you like to have a troop carrier and some water cannons and some armored vehicles with machine gun, 50 calibers machine guns on them, and all that type of equipment, grenade launchers and hand grenades and smoke bombs. How would you like to have that for your local sheriff's department? We can get it for you on a special budgeting situation as we bring this back from other overseas military operations. We can almost give it to you. All you have to do is agree on some kind of a minimal payback or whatever, or we'll carry it for you like your mortgage on your home, and we'll supply you with this equipment. All you have to do is agree that if we needed you under a federal emergency or catastrophic situation, that you guys would come on board with the Homeland Federal Security, Homeland Security Operations, and sign on to handle riot control and that type of problem if, in fact, we needed it. So that's where, and I have mind-boggling, and this is all in the DVDs too, I have mind-boggling things that, you know, where they going into these little sheriff's departments in South Carolina someplace and supplying them with two armored cars and a 50-caliber machine guns, you know. I mean, this is like, what are they? It's going after local cattle wrestlers, I guess. I don't know. It's a mind-boggling kind of an arrangement that they have. So they've been doing that all along for several years. And, again, the reason is we have to think about that. You have to think, and I apply common sense and logic in an awful lot of the investigations, because if A and B doesn't fit together like a puzzle, you know, then you got to stop. You got to say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. You know, what they're doing, they're preparing for a situation when the time comes that the general public knows that there is something coming in that's going to affect the earth, something that we cannot stop, cannot change, and cannot move. Now, the fact that they're putting in the foodstuffs on the with a mindset as if they may need it this year, that bothers me. Okay, when I first realized that the dating and moving in these freeze-dried foods and survival foods and equipment going in underground, and some of the underground facilities are strictly developed for growing agricultural goods beneath the ground. All right? So, and doing the dating on getting the foods into the underground facilities last year, last month, and this week. On that basis, we have to assume they're not worried about this thing for 40 years down the road. We're not worried about this coming by a long time away from here. All right? Now, a while back, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, ordered 500,000 coffins and had them delivered near Atlanta, where the CDC is located. Since then, my understanding is that there have been another million of these purchased. Now, I haven't proved that, but 500,000, we do have the pictures and the paperwork on that. They are designed as they are coffins, specifically patented with a special a manufactured product that will not excessively pollute when they cremate. So they're made as cremation boxes, and each one of them is big enough to handle three or four dead persons, and they are designed to be burned and cremated. Now, I proceeded to investigate farther in a multitude of directions, and one was, I wondered if the United States was the only country that was doing this, and not to my surprise, I guess, I found out that every major nation on the earth is building underground facilities during the same 20 years. The Russians have put out a mandate in the year 2010 where they said we will have 5,000 new underground hideouts, survival facilities in Russia by the year 2014. And they did accomplish that. They're not all large, they're not all gigantic, but they do have 5,000 now finished and being filled with foodstuffs, the same as in America. They also do have one facility that's built at a single location underground that can accommodate 60,000 people, and that's in Russia. In Red China, they have built 3,000 at least of these underground tunnels and hideouts. In their case, in the case of the Red Chinese, they've built a couple of them large enough to where they have stored entire small fleets of battleships and aircraft underground as we speak. Now, I have film and photographs of everything that I'm talking about today. It's all on the DVD, including showing you battleships underground in some of the Chinese tunnels. Now, the Chinese had a good deal. Well, they had two good things for them. One was that they had already had for many years, I guess actually going back almost 1,000 years, 500 years, their warrior chiefs throughout China had utilized underground tunnels in, of course, a very small way, but they did have underground tunnels all over the continent of China. So in some places, all they had to do was go in where they originally were and bore them out and finish them off inside. But amazingly, and again, I have photographs of it in the DVD in China, they have, as I mentioned earlier, one of their drilling pieces of equipment, which, of course, if they couldn't design them good enough for themselves, which, of course, they can, they easily were able to buy some from the United States. But they have one of their units is that huge triple drilling system where they can go into the side of the mountain big enough. And I have photographs of all this drilling equipment as well, big enough that you can literally, when they back that piece of equipment out of the side of a mountain, you can drive three or two 18-wheelers side by side. They have, which I also have photos and film, live film in the DVD here in America, of the 18-wheelers having to stop to let other 18-wheelers pass at an intersection. So that's how big these are. These things are gigantic. Some of them are 30 stories down into the ground in the United States. And again, the ones in Red China are so large that they can accommodate putting battleships underground in dry dock to salvage them when the time comes. Now, additionally, anybody can look this up. It's got a computer. If you look up the word seed vault, you'll find that there's an internationally cooperative seed vault. Actually, there's three of them, but one of them that I've got complete coverage on in the DVD. But one of them, which is, I believe it's located in Denmark, if I'm not mistaken off the top of my head, it is a an underground facility into the side of a granite mountain, or an ice mountain, I'm not sure. I believe it's granite. It's in an island up near Denmark, and it actually holds every possible seed for the reseeding of the globe, the salvage of every growing plant on the globe, in the event of a total destruction of everything that's growing on the surface of the globe. And that's a cooperative thing. It was built a few years back. It's now finished and completely filled with billions of seeds, all the seeds that one would ever need to reseed the face of the earth. And it also includes Of course, it's in other locations, but it does include, in fact, female and male sperm and eggs, etc., so that that will be preserved too if needed to help restart the face of the earth if the destruction is that profuse on the returning of Planet X. Again, I mentioned earlier the biblical writings are kind of amazing when you look at Revelations as to exactly what we're looking at. I don't have it off the top of my head. My memory and all this stuff is 8,000 things into my little tiny brain cell here. But in Revelations, it even describes that when the sun is blacked out and the stars are blacked out, that the wealthy and the elite and the leaders and their support people will all be hiding in the holes in the sides of mountains and underground. And if that isn't amazingly prophetic, and that being right out of Revelations itself, where it talks about the elite, limited few leadership will be hiding in the underground facilities that they have created for themselves, and that's in the Bible. It's a little bit scary to have something so exact.
Mr. Fletcher, if I can interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me toss a couple of real brief questions at you first. Okay, the obvious question people are going to ask is, if you've got 103 underground fortresses, basically, and all of these tunnels, how in the world, and if you've got 18-wheelers and people coming in and out, how can you keep something like this a secret? That's question number one, including the truck drivers going in and out.
Right. Okay, well, as a matter of fact, I direct that, and it's interesting because the very beginning of the second disc on my DVD, the very beginning of that starts out by saying, how can they keep it secret if it's this big a deal? Okay? I would have to, which I point out in the DVD, first off, that is that the atomic bomb, thousands of people worked on the atomic bomb in the 40s. It was done all over the country in many, many locations. And when Roosevelt died, Harry Truman took over the presidency. He was the vice president, and he did not know about the atomic bomb when he took over the presidency. He was read into the program, and he said, let's finish it as quick as you can and see if it works. Harry Truman, vice president, did not know about the atomic bomb and where the status it was at when he took over the presidency. The bottom line is all of this is secret and top secret. Every location, for the most part, is top secret. Now, we know where they are, most of them, and one of them is the NORAD facility. That's been back in the news recently, as a matter of fact. But what
that's
they
right.
did about a year or so back, they went into the old NORAD, that's, you know, into the Granite Mountain thing, right? They removed most all of the equipment that was originally put in there in NORAD in that location, which is a big one, by the way. They went in there and they pulled an awful lot of the stuff out of there, put it into a new military base nearby, or not a new one, but a different location. And the NORAD, the bulk of it had been moved out so that they could change that into being another survival facility mostly. In other words, mostly, and upgraded it, eliminated some stuff that they felt they didn't need. But basically, they dismantled it about a year or two ago and moved most of that out to another base and to make it another one of the 103 underground facilities. I have I have videotapes of down inside there. I have amazingly Some of those are actually buildings supported by huge shock absorbers that are gigantic springs. The NORAD facility, and they'll have to back up again and say, for the most part, nobody can get into any of those facilities, period. So what's in them, nobody talks about it. You talk about it, you get killed, period. End of story. You sign off on that, and if you come out and blow the whistle on any, it's the same thing with the atomic bomb. If anybody started talking about the bomb that was at a level that knew about it and knew what was being put together, they were dead. They killed them, period. It's pretty easy to keep secrets. It really is. And by the way, we have, which is a kind of a big point that I make in the DVDs too, we have so many secrets in the United States at this point in time, it's outrageous. It's crazy. But keeping it secret is actually not that difficult. And again, I interrupted myself, but the facility like in NORAD, which I do have some footage on that, interestingly enough, underground. It's on a shock absorbers. Buildings are built inside of the holes in the ground, and the buildings themselves are individually supported on a shock absorbing system to accommodate an atomic bomb being hit, dropped within a couple of miles of NORAD. And theoretically, of course, obviously never tested it, but theoretically, the buildings inside these facilities will live through it unless it happened to be a direct hit. But that's how good they are and how profuse the construction is. And like I say, you physically can see an awful lot of it on my DVD. I do have some shocking photographs. Matter of fact, I actually, in a photo section in my website, we actually have a few good pictures of the 18-wheelers passing each other underground that are actually just in the website itself. And now, I'll tell you what I want to give for the folks that are not compromised by computers. My address, if you drop me a note, I'll be glad to send you a catalog of our different reports. But the Nibiru double DVD, if you just drop me, it's $24.95. We pay for the shipping, and it's both discs for 4 hours. And let me give you my address. It's just Bob Fletcher, Box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803. It's Box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803. And tell me if you want to just order it up, just drop me a check for $24.95, or you can go online or order it any manner you wish. Or if you just want to get the catalog, drop me a note and I'll send one to you. Now, what questions do you have? Because I have some great answers for any of your questions. We've just about covered all of it in our report, and we tried to think of everything you might ask, but go ahead. Anything else that comes to mind?
Well, a couple of things. We're from the tunnels, from the fortresses, from all this, where's the dirt? How can you hide the dirt? I mean, that would be my question.
Where's the dirt? My God. Yeah. Well, they've been doing it for you need to see. Actually, again, you can actually see the units that they do this do this digging with and everything. It's tremendous. The dirt goes out truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of dirt. They've been doing these for years and years in terms of the construction. And if you went to any of the facilities, even there around the darn airport in Denver, like I say, they're not doing as much digging as they used to, but they still are doing digging there. And they just take the truckloads and truckloads. They go, and God knows, I don't know, they sell the dirt. They put it in they build resorts in the middle of Timbuktu with the dirt. The dirt's the least of their problems.
Okay.
And by the way, I have to say, I know I want to make an interesting point, because I had a question, because I know some of these, believe it or not, a couple of them were dug originally in the desert or in what would be considered a desert-type terrain, and like the Area 51 situation, all right? And by the way, if you know anybody that's been in Area 51?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I'm making a point in case you missed that. I happen to know Bob Lazar and a couple other people that I had talked to many years ago, you know, and they're flown in. They fly those guys from Las Vegas, from that area, out to Area 51 every morning. You know, they go on a plane. There's three or four planes, like 727 aircraft. They load them up. There's no markings on the planes. They walk in, they get on the plane, they fly in, they do their day's work, or if they're staying for a week or whatever it is, and then they load back in a plane and they fly back to the local airport there and offload the 727 with a couple hundred people or 120 people, whatever it is. And they do that every day instead of everybody else that takes their briefcase and their grabs the bus and goes into downtown Los Angeles to work. These guys are catching a plane in the Nevada airport and fly in. You can take pictures of the planes and everything. There's no markings or numbers at anything on the plane. And actually, it's an airline, an entire airline with its own name, and it's exclusively for flying people into Area 51 and back out to go to work every day. Okay, now, shifting gears back to what was I talking about? I was talking about the
You had solicited questions. I have just one more. Okay.
Okay.
The question is this: obviously, if these people are preparing, as you say they are, to live underground for a while, what do they expect to happen on top of the surface? You know, on Earth, I mean, are we going to get fried? Is everyone going to die?
Okay.
I mean, you know, what's the deal?
Oh, all right. Again, I will get to that.
Okay.
That's a good question. I want to get. I want to make sure I got everything covered. Of course, I haven't. I mean, you can't cover everything. Oh, all right. I was going to make this point when you ask about secrecy. There's been an awful lot of high-level people that have been murdered and eliminated over the last 10 years. And some of them, it's kind of incongruent, kind of like, well, why would they... You know, what specifically might have been the reason that these guys were terminated? And originally, I didn't have an answer. I had one of them was a friend of mine who was an engineer for some of those tunnels we were talking about. All right. When you ask about how do they keep it secret, this is kind of... kind of creepy stuff. This is really bad news. But a fellow named Phil Schneider, who was, according to him, see, you know, on the whistleblowers, I want to backtrack this a little, kind of give us a preference on what I'm about to talk about. Whistleblowers, we're kind of stuck on to either believe them or not believe them. If a guy comes out and he says, hey, I was an engineer and I helped on the design of 13 of these tunnels, and I did it for so many years, et cetera, et cetera, and this happened and that happened, or a guy comes out from the Central Intelligence and he says, I was a CIA operative and all I did was kill people for the CIA as an assassin, and I did it for 15 years, and then I got sick of it, and I quit, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, and he talks about, I saw drug operations, I was on airplanes with people that became presidents of the United States that had been involved with narcotics programs and things of that. So we have a choice when a guy comes forward and does that whistleblowing, all right? There's no good way a guy's going to come out and say, and here's 20-minute film of this high-level person from government picking up dope and doing this and doing that, it's very difficult for people to have enough evidence so that we who listen to them, you have to either take them at face value or you say, well, they're a nut or they're a liar or they're trying to do this or do that, you know. But when you come out with that kind of stuff, and many of us, see, because I am one of those guys. I'm a whistleblower, all right? Now, all of my general information, et cetera, is absolutely proven. I can prove by documentation, and not even counting the 250 pages that the FBI has on my story. But my whole thing is, fortunately, the way I came in on it, mine is documented. And all the evidence out of the Iran-Contra inquiries and the fact that you can go on and see that I testify before the Intelligence Committee, and I have requests from the Senate Intelligence Committee to supply them with a report on the Oklahoma bombing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all documented in my case. But it puts me in a unique position because when I meet these people or talk to them or hear whistleblowers, quote unquote, coming forward and telling stories that are a little extraordinary, I don't throw them in the trash too quick because my story is extraordinary. And I don't throw theirs in the garbage very fast. But we have people like Phil Schneider. I met Phil and was with him on two or three speaking engagements in different parts of the country. Phil had been an engineer in the underground facilities, came out, talked about it, talked about how he had crossed paths with people underground in the facilities that he was not supposed to know was there, and was in a shootout with them. And he shows his chest. He showed me his chest. He showed it on, I think it's even on YouTube, where his entire trunk was blown up. He looks like he had fallen in front of a shredding machine. And his fingers are gone off of one hand. Phil was with myself at one location. I think it was in 95 or 96. I guess it was 95. And he sat down with me and he said, and I didn't know at that time whether to believe his story. It was so extraordinary. But I gave him the benefit of the doubt because being a whistleblower myself, I'm almost obligated to do that. I talked to him and he said to me, he said, I have to have dinner with you tonight. I need to sit down. I need your advice. And I said, okay. So we went, we sat down, had dinner. My spouse was with me at the time. And he said, I have two questions. Primarily, he says, how can I tell my story? Because I know people do not believe my story. How can I present it without ruining it? How can I present my story? And he was asking me for actually just advice. He says, you've been doing this for like 5-10 years, at 10 years at that time. He said, you know, is there anything I can do? I'm not fooling the people, but I want them to understand this is real, you know, and these facilities were real, and what I was doing was real, all right? And so I tried to help him as good as I could. But then he said, he asked me, he said, you know, I have a bunch of books and things that I would like, that I want to give you because they're going to kill me. I'm going to be dead. There's no question. I know they're planning to kill me. And he said, there's people here at this facility, at this speaking engagement, that I know have been following me. And I didn't know whether he was being paranoid or not, but I accepted his gift he gave me as some of his personal books. A couple of months later, he was strangled to death in his hotel room. He was dead. He's gone, period. And that was the reason for telling you this whole story about Phil. He's one of several. We had a guy named Michael Hastings. He was a reporter a couple years ago. 3 o'clock in the morning, he's speeding through Los Angeles to try to get to an embassy because he was to break open this giant story above top secret that nobody was aware of. and his car was blown up into two pieces with the engine and transmission blown 80 feet away from the rest of the vehicle. And he never made it on his immediate trip at speeding through Los Angeles to get to the embassy, because he was going to try to actually hide in the embassy before they killed him and caught him and killed him. Well, they had already caught him, and his car was blown to smithereens, and it was like a Mercedes-Benz or something like that, or
yeah,
a Porsche.
We're familiar with that, but what was the motive of the murder?
Okay.
On Mr. Hastings.
All right. I believe Hastings was going to blow the whistle on Nibiru coming back in. Bill Colby, the head of the CIA, was retired. He was supposed to come and testify and was found drowned. He was killed. He was murdered. He was found dead in a lake in front of his house 2 days before he was going to testify. And another guy, the head of the CIA, Bill Casey, during the Iran business back then. See, now this all started with what they called expansion of the continuity of government program. That's what they call the tunnels and the hideouts. All right, continuity of government. That was started in '83 with Reagan, Bush, and Bill Casey. Bill Casey was to go back and testify. 2 days before he was to testify, he had a stroke drinking his coffee, took two drinks of his cup of coffee, and went nose down in it and was never conscious again. He was murdered. They just said that he had a stroke, but I happen to know, because a friend of mine was with Bill Casey for many years in the CIA and was actually a lady that wrote his speeches for him for many years, and she informed me that it was interesting. He quote-unquote had a stroke, but the day that they took him in, they gave him a lobotomy so he couldn't speak. And then he died like the day later or something like that. Mm-hmm. There are many people. Oh, by the way, about 18 astronomers died in Sweden or Switzerland in a meeting of astronomers who had been studying the Nibiru and the cable car they were in. At 1,000 feet above the ground, fell to the ground with a broken cable, and it killed all 18 of them. All right, so it's one of these situations where astronomers, and by the way, the banking elite, everybody's aware of the banking elite, the money structuring and the transfer and the vanishing of the gold out of Fort Knox. You know, when it gets down with three bankers in the head of the International Monetary Fund, for example, they sit down and talk with each other and they say, what's going on? You know, where's the money going to? Where's the physical money disappearing to? The gold, where is the gold? And when the head of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, sat down here with the heads of the Federal Reserve in the United States, and he said, I have to have an audit. I want to know where the gold is, because International Monetary Fund is not going to cooperate with keeping secrets like this. We're not going to do that. We got to know how much gold is there, where it is. We want an audit. And the Federal Reserve guys, the banking that owns the Federal Reserve system, by the way, which is not, that's private banks, for everybody, the people that are not aware of that. The Federal Reserve is a private banking system that controls all of the money in America and therefore the world. It is a private banking system that will not respond to the Senate or the Congress, and they are not obligated to. And when the head of the IMF came over here from France or Belgium, wherever it was, flew in on his private jet, demanded to have an audit. They told him, no, go away, don't bother us. And he said, I'm going to go before the United Nations, and I'm going to force you guys, with the UN behind me, to give us an audit on all the gold that's in there that belongs to so many other countries. Tons and tons of it. All right? They still told him, shut up, go away, we're not going to do it, and don't go before the UN. The following day, he got on his airplane in New York City, was loaded up, had the engines cranking up, and the New York Police Department came in, stopped the plane, pulled him off of the plane, arrested him for sexually harassing the maid in his hotel room of $1,800 a day. Sexually harassing the maid. The bottom line was this. They said, if you shut up and get out of here and don't talk about this gold stuff anymore, we're not going to charge you. Otherwise, we're going to charge you for attempted rape of a maid in your hotel room. And, of course, the guy was it was tough. Tough
okay.
beans.
No,
got
Bob,
on his plane. So,
okay, go
yes,
ahead.
Sir.
No, I don't want to say.
No, that's okay, good. But I wanted to point out, and that's kind of important, actually, and it really comes back to your question of how do they keep it secret. They are killing people and taking people of such a high level. This guy, by the way, was supposed to become the president of France, I think. But anyhow, he's gone. He's gone. He's quiet. He's not said anything. And they shut him up, and the rest of them, they're bumping him off at high level whistleblowers. They are bumping them off and keeping them quiet. And again, here's the problem, and this is it. This is important. And by the way, I can stick around for another half an hour today because I want to answer some real serious questions for you. All right. I sidetracked myself. The problem with keeping the secrecy is not quite as difficult as we would think. What they've done, which I mentioned earlier, they are preparing for the time when people realize that something is coming in. And let me ask you a question, right? If you guys, one of you, was the president of the United States, and assuming you were honest, and your scientists came in and said, there's a possibility of this Planet X coming back by. It's almost positive because it is doing it on a regular cycle, and the cycle is upon us for the return of this thing. What do you do? There is no way, and this is a question people ask me, when are they going to tell us? They are never going to tell us. There is no way that they are ever going to be able to announce that there is something coming that might flip the Earth 27 degrees on its axis, that may cause the equivalent of Noah's floods again, and may bombard us with meteorite storms, for two different periods of time. First time when it comes around to go behind the Earth, and the second time when it goes back out from the sun to go back out to the farthest reaches again for several hundred years, all right? There's no way that can ever be told to the, not just the American people, but to the globe, because obviously the rioting, nobody would ever go to work again. I mean, if they said, hey, it looks like about 60 days down the road, this is going to happen, okay? Nobody would go to work again. Nobody would ever do anything again. They would go crazy. They'd go into the stores. The riots would be unbelievable. Now, that's where we get back to all the weapons and equipment they're putting into local polices and the sheriff departments, et cetera. That's why they're totally preparing. And, by the way, I know maybe you know, and I'm sure you do, but there's a project that's on the drawing board. Now, I do not have the government paperwork on this. So this I'm putting out only because it's all over the website, web pages, but I don't have good info on this for myself. But it appears that they're planning to do a 3 or 4 month preparation for martial law. And what I mean by that is they have this this huge actual project that theoretically has been announced, where they're actually going to be going through all of the military steps that they would have to do during martial law.
That's Jade Helm 15. Jade Helm 15.
The Jade Helm. Right.
January 15th right. through September, or July 15th through September 15th
July,
of this year.
Right. Okay.
Right. Yep.
Now, here's what they are going to do, and this is why this bothers me. This Jade Helms operation, which is a practice, so to speak, for martial law. They are going to have to, in America, and the other countries will probably do the same thing, they're going to have martial law declared probably a few months before Nibiru is close enough to be seen. All right? Now, Nibiru coming back, and by the way, there's like five little moons that travels with Nibiru, goes around Nibiru on a regular basis, just being dragged around like its own little solar system. The government will have to have martial law completely in place before it's seen. It will be visually seen in the sky like a star. All of a sudden, there will be a star that all of, and God knows how many, there's millions of amateur astronomers that will see that. And once it appears, it'll be coming on in, and it will take about 4 months for it to be close enough to be a serious problem and going around the sun and then going back out. When it comes in, it will be dragging God knows how many, a few million miles of space junk behind it, traveling with it. The same as a comet. When a comet comes in, like Halley's Comet had a 24 million mile tail behind it. Drags around every time it comes around, every 75 years. It's measured to be that long. We have no idea how long or big the junk is going to be behind Nibiru. When it goes around the sun, according to astronomers that have studied it, and particularly one of which I mentioned, Gil Broussard, and I totally respect his studies on this thing, it'll go around the sun. We will be going around on our regular orbit of the sun, our 360, and we will come around after it had passed behind the sun, and we will go through the tail, which will take approximately 1 hour. This is measured by the width of it and how long, and et cetera, how long it takes us to go around, the speed that we're traveling out at when we go around to complete our orbit. When it goes by, we will go through the tail. It will take about an hour. During that period of time, we will be exposed to all of the space junk, which will be meteorites, all right, if you will, for lack of a better term or whatever. That's how it will affect us. It will rain meteorites of various sizes, depending on how well our protective shield does in terms of burning them up as we pass through the tail. Then it will take 155 days. We will have gone around the sun in the back, and it is going to be ahead of us, and we'll be going back on out to far reaches towards Pluto. We will go through that tail one more time after about 155 days, and we will have a second battering, if you will, of meteorites and a meteor storm. The other things, we can take a break here if you want to, and I'll get back to if it's appropriate. We take a break now, and I'll get back to what other things will happen. What's already happening as a direct cause of Nibiru coming back in, and when it's going to be here.
Absolutely, let's do that now. We're talking with Mr. Bob Fletcher. Bob Fletcher. FletcherInvestigations.com. It's linked off of HagmanandHagman.com. And he's talking about, Planet Nibiru. Planet X. Very interesting. Stay with us.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 3 on this Wednesday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Today is Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. Our guest tonight is Mr. Bob Fletcher. We have been talking about government secrecy pertaining specifically to Nibiru and disclosure of sorts, commenting from Ronald Reagan's speech to the UN, how he stated he almost wished that an extraterrestrial threat would present itself so that the human race would be unified and would be able to face that threat, as well as other hints from leaders and whistleblowers pertaining to the coming of a possible inbound planet. Nibiru, Planet X, has been the topic of discussion from TV shows to radio interviews.
Everyone's all over the board on this.
Coast to Coast not too long ago talking about this, and has done a fantastic job of laying an excellent amount of information and groundwork as to the background and people involved and what's happening now. So we're going to let you continue, Mr. Fletcher. We want to thank you again for your extended stay of time, and you're welcome to sign off anytime you'd like, but go ahead and continue.
Okay. Thank you very much. And listen, as a matter of fact, it's interesting, you know, I was on Mr. Norrie's Coast to Coast program a little while back, and it was actually fourth time or something. I had been away from it for a couple of years, but he made the comment, which is really true. He said when he spoke first about this, he had a guest talking, I guess, about it 12 years ago. And when that happened, he was joking a little bit, but he said they almost pulled him off the air because they thought this was such a crazy thing. And, you know, nobody wanted to even think seriously about something like Nibiru, Planet X, being real. And he says, but now, and I can certainly vouch for that, it's a whole different attitude. Things are quite different than it was 12 or 15 years ago for those few people that talked about it or even mentioned it at all, because it was had that science fiction kind of a thing to it. But in fact, there's so much information now, it's quite different. Now, I wanted to point out a logical question that people have is, one, is it affecting us yet? Is there any effect that might be recognizable now? All right? And the answer is absolutely. And if we look, first off, you know, we have this problem that nobody seriously answered. We have millions and millions of dead animals. We have the fishes, the whales, the dolphins that are beaching themselves. Seals, sea lions, birds. We had, I don't remember what it was, 2,000 geese a couple of weeks ago up here in Idaho, where I am now. Mm-hmm. 2,000 geese just fell out of the sky. All right? And of course, they're coming up with all kind and millions of fish and crustaceans, shellfish, and what have you. And then, of course, we have the weather. The weather changes, the activity on the sun, developing entire holes on the surface of the sun, which has never happened. It started a couple years ago, started having this extraordinary, weird reaction. The solar flares are gigantic and in huge multiples. And, of course, you know, the people that are trying to keep this stuff quiet, nobody ever says, oh, well, maybe it's related to this Planet X thing. You know, they won't do that. In one case or in many cases, they say the astronomers are perplexed. You know, all of the planets, all of them, going back a couple of years ago, started to heat up. And the increase in the temperature on the surface of all the planets, which they're measuring on a regular basis, and they do it with chemical variations, adjustments in the chemistry on the surface, and how it reads with infrared cameras and all of that. It's the way they test that, test it to see what the temperature variations are. They started heating up out by Pluto, coming inwards towards the sun, not from the sun going out. They also are changing literally the surface atmosphere. So they don't like to call it atmosphere a lot, but the surface of most all of the planets, even the big ones like Venus and Mercury and Saturn and what have you, are all changing. And they don't understand what's going on. They don't know why it's changing. But the idea, for example, a brand new one on Venus. This is a report that was out just in March, 30 days ago in March, where it talked about that on Venus they have an unexplained, what they call a warm layer discovered on Venus's atmosphere. All right, this is what I call the bowling ball effect of Nibiru coming back in. We have had an increase in falling stars, shooting stars, meteorites, and that type of thing. Over the last 3-4 years, it's been going up higher and higher. Now, the weather, I don't have to explain the weather to anybody at all. The weather on the entire globe is totally screwed up and changed around. And I put in my DVDs, which we completed and made them available a few months back for the general public, all right, I put in there that I said, mark my words, that the winter that we just went through, pretty much, was going to be one of the craziest winters in the United States ever. And that was put out and completed way back, you know, when we get mixing these things and manufacturing and getting them ready for shipping and what have you. Now, I'm going all the way back before the first of the year, all right, when I was talking about it. And I was talking about what was going to happen, and lo and behold, to my surprise, it was amazingly accurate, because as we know, like in New York and places up there, Jersey, Boston, they never had any kind of a winter like they just experienced. We've had 4 years of a drought in Southern California and the Southwest that as of another couple of months with no rain, all of the vegetation can be scratched off. We are not going to be producing anything at all, for the most part, out of what used to be the vegetation breadbasket for the world, particularly, of course, the United States. Nothing is going to grow. They're already at a point now where it would take like 2 years of rain to catch up with where they are right now. The reservoirs, and I think I even included a picture or two in the DVDs, the reservoirs in that area are so low that they've gone from being 70 to 200 feet deep, huge basins of water, and the boats are now sitting on the ground, the dry ground, the bottom of those reservoirs. They're empty. It's mind-boggling. All right? Now, a strange thing happened. It was interesting. The president finally mentioned it a couple of months, about maybe 60 days ago. But in Miami, on the high tides now, the regular high tides in Miami Beach, the water comes in 5 blocks into the city of Miami Beach on every high tide. They have been obligated to put millions of dollars of pumps permanently implanted in and around Miami Beach to pump the high tide every day back out of the city so it doesn't destroy all of those businesses there every day. And that's happening because of the freshwater runoff from all of the melting of glaciers in the north and the south. And the glaciers are melting. This is an interesting situation because I got into studying this when I did this DVD report here. And I have some of this in the DVD. The bottom line is that the glaciers are actually melting like from underneath, not from the top, but from underneath, as if they were being warmed from the globe center, the hub of the core of the Earth, upwards. The melting is taking place from like underneath these glaciers, and they're losing the amount of melting of the glaciers. Nobody's talking about this. You can find it if you snoop into this yourself on your computer. You can find this. But the bottom line is, they're melting the entire size of a state of like Pennsylvania, for crying out loud, on a regular basis in terms of how much it's going. A couple of weeks ago, April the 7th, in the Antarctic, it reached 68 degrees. Has never been that hot in the Antarctic in the history of weather keeping. 68 degrees in part of the Antarctic itself. The planet's heating up. All of our weather, the weather's changed. Never going to be the same again until after this thing passes. Now, I'm going to give you a date now. And again, this is not mine, and I have to point this out. I hope that I am wrong. I hope all the people and thousands of documentation that I've gone over and the conversations I've had with the people that have been studying just the scientific part. See, I got into it from the politics. I came into it from the money, the theft of the money, the secret underground facilities. Europe, all of the European nations are doing the same thing. Red China, they're same thing. Russia, same thing. And this is all proven, documented, period. End of story. There's no discussion about whether they exist. And again, they're all in the DVD, physical pictures. You can't miss it. And even motion pictures to a certain extent. I've got some films that were shot. The bottom line is, I hope I'm wrong. You guys can welcome to call me back, I'll be back on maybe before then. But I hope I can come back in about 7 months, 9 months, or a year, and we'll have a party on a Bob Fletcher's a jerk for the jerk of the month. I hope I am totally wrong, but I have a terrible feeling that after all of the study that I've done, that I'm not wrong. The estimated return of Nibiru, the most likely, there's what they've done is a couple of groups that have been doing this, studying this now for years and years and years, have come up with really what amounts to being like three possibilities. All right, the most believed to be possible real return of Nibiru is that it will be first seen this December of 2015. 2015, this December, the first sighting is supposed to take place. Now, what will happen, as I mentioned earlier, it'll appear as a star, even though there's three or four pieces to it, actually, a couple of moons, and the Nibiru itself. Nibiru is believed, calculated to be five times the size of Earth. It's not going to hit Earth. It's not going to be a collision of Nibiru itself. But its gravitational effects, and basically that's one of the biggest things, it's the magnetic and gravitational effect is going to throw the waters up from onto the coastlines without anything striking it at all. It's just like the moon and the sun pushes and pulls our tides every day, pulling it in and pulling it out. Nibiru will pass around and will have a tremendous gravitational effect on our waters. And the belief is that this was Noah's floods, that the floods were caused by a passing of Nibiru coming close. The belief is when it is seen in December, it'll take January, February, and then March and April, those 2 months will be the closest time for it to be causing serious problems as it goes around the sun and then back out again, and then it'll be gone. We don't have to worry about it. But we will have to worry about flooding and the rising of the waters on all the coastlines, we would have to worry about, as I said, going through the tail of this son of a gun two times, 155 days apart. And again, that relates to the speed of it and the speed of the Earth traveling around the sun, going through the tail again the second time after we come around. And now, so what does this leave us? Since I pretty well calculated that our government and all the governments will have to do martial law about 2 or 3 months before December, all right? Maybe even, probably 3 or 4 months, all right? Now, the scary thing is I had calculated this, and not only, I mean, myself but others, but this is primarily my analogy of what would be an obligation for the government to keep this thing secret, to keep the control over the people. If they have martial law already on the street corners for some reason, now it would be one of three logical points. Either the outbreak of a disease that would convince the American people that we needed to be curfewed and et cetera and under martial law to prevent spreading the disease. It could be Ebola or anything else or a combination. A more likely reason would be a terrorist event. Terrorist events in the United States big enough that where the average American would say, thank God they're going to do martial law. And then the third would be the potential, the potential of the outbreak of World War III, where it looks like it's so likely, potentially going to happen that they declare martial law ahead of time. So one of those three things, I believe, will be the false flag. Well, and they may not be false flags. Of course, with the planet coming in around to cause this kind of effect on the Earth, so bad that they're planning to be underground before, when the martial law is about to take place, they will already either be under or they will be on their way into the side of the mountain and to be protected by whatever police forces and military are left upstairs. Now, what will happen once this thing is seen, and again, it's calculated to be in December, and there's a reason for that. All of the historic reports on this thing, all of the ones that have been checked out and verified that there were entire Earth changes simultaneously on the globe at two or three different incremental points in time, all right, it's been proven. And again, the writings talking about this strange thing, the visiting dragon that flashed across the sky and blocked out the sun for hours and hours. You know, I think it's like 3 hours of calculated to do an eclipse of the sun. All right. All of those things coincidentally, or not, but it's not coincidental, they all took place in March or April. And that's going back to the Chinese records, the Tibetan monks, going back to the biblical, the Christian Bible, talking about meteor storms and the blackening of the sun and all of those things taking place at given points in time in the Bible. And they all corresponded with the Chinese reports, the ancient Tibetans, and even, of course, the Sumerian writings, etc. So that's where they come up with the idea of December, March and April, during the time of Passover, is the time it's expected to be worse. Now, if it does not take place this year, then they expect it either the next year or the next year. So they're giving us like a three-year spread on the potential. But the feeling is that it's going to be this year, be most likely. If they take a percentage, they say like about an 80% chance this year, considerably less the next, and considerably less the following year.
Okay, so Bob, if I can just say something, the timing of that.
There's no hedging. In other words, here's the point: the analysis is relative to so many. Figures, astronomical calculations of potential distance and all the rest of that, the speed that it travels at and all the rest of that. All right, and that's where the bulk of these people that have been doing those studies. Again, it's not myself. I'm not an astronomer. I'm the messenger, if you will. These guys have calculated it, and that's the feeling. Now, again, on my side of it, that's their thing, and that's the astronomical potential of it, et cetera. And again, setting it up where the saying that it happened previously during Passover, March and April, apparently on the two or three times they've been able to find writings about this thing. All right, and I haven't even talked about, and we don't have time today, but talked about a thing called the star disk, which was a discovery that was made that was done 3,600 years ago, and describes the entire event in a drawing, if you will, done in bronze during the Bronze Age. But we don't have time to get into that. But it actually gives, because of the constellations' locations that are printed, drawn out on this bronze disc that's laminated with gold to highlight it, was discovered in 1999 in Germany at an ancient astronomical viewing site in Germany, and it describes the passing of Nibiru, and with the new computerized programs, when they put the positions of the constellations as they're seen on it, they're actually able to go back and date this to the very day it was created, describing it, and it was 3,600 years ago on this sky disk. By the way, this is something you can look up on the computer. Just look up sky disk. It's probably good enough. You'll find it. It's mind-boggling because it's kind of like a diary of when this thing passed and did the eclipse on the sun. But the dating on it is unbelievable because with the new computerization, they can actually get it down to the fact that they're describing and the drawing on this thing is done at 8:30 in the morning. At 8:30 in the morning in the daytime, and that's how accurate the new computers can calculate the location of these star constellations. So anyhow, it's amazing, and that happens to be 8,600 years ago when it was drawn, if you will, or created. 3,600. I had the 8 I had in my mind is actually the date and the April. I think it was April the 10th. At 8:30 in the morning, that's where I got the 8, we're talking 3,600 years ago for that particular piece of documentation. Okay. Now, any questions at all? Unfortunately, that's as close as we can get. Now, in terms of what's spooky you see about this is I'm watching the political part of this thing. All of a sudden, they announced this planned martial law practice that falls right into a period of time when, if in fact they thought this thing was coming in December, they would have to be planning to do martial law. So maybe it's a direct practice, if you will, as it relates. The movement of our battleships and the stuff that's going on today as we speak in the Iranian waters and over there, there's something very militarily wrong taking place today as we speak. They're moving the entire fleet into waters that they've not been in. I don't know what's going on with that. We have the Russians, of course, rattling sabers constantly. See, so You know, and we have ISIS. It would be so easy for them to do a false flag attack with the ISIS. And then just yesterday, I discovered that apparently there's been an FBI cover-up on the fact that there is an entire ISIS group, a huge group, almost what you refer to as an army, if you will, been developing in Mexico. And
right.
The FBI has been keeping it covered for a couple of months, where they very easily could come across directly from Mexico up into here and carry out some terrorist event. We have to watch for the movement towards martial law, and when that happens, regardless of what they tell us it is, it's going to be because they're preparing to go underground for the visual sighting in December of it'll just look like a new star. But once that happens, the cat's out of the bag, and the martial law has got to be in before before people see it. That's all it amounts to.
The way I look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're going to have to eventually crawl out of their little wormholes that they've established for themselves. And when
right.
they do, there are going to be a lot of upset people when they come out of there.
I don't know that there's going to be that many people.
Well,
the condition...
If I made it through, I'd be pretty hacked off,
yeah,
let me tell you.
Of course. But that's, you know, I mean, their point of view is just that's too darn bad. You know, I mean, they could care less about you. You know, I mean, they care. And again,
so true.
You get back and you say, oh, wait a minute, that makes sense. No wonder they're not fixing up anything. There are no roads or nothing being repaired. They're not doing that. What's wrong with the American people? That they don't wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, why aren't they fixing 75 and 100-year-old bridges and roads and tunnels? You know, the Holland Tunnel that got a couple million cars go over the San Francisco Bridge every night. You know, why aren't they fixing that? They all should be condemned. Most of them are so lousy that they do not qualify to be safe to travel on. They're not spending any money. They've taken it all. It's gone. It's underground. Why are they? You know, a couple of years ago, some of the freeze-dried foods, they couldn't even fill other people's orders. Completely U.S. government. Everything they were making was going into government contracts underground. You know, they've been debts for like 5 years, very seriously. You know, and again, see, once you put, that's what I call my side of it. It's the corrupted politics of it. The money's gone. They've been building these things. They're keeping this stuff secret. Certain people that may have had highest level of intelligence information on really what's going on, if they look like they're going into retirement and they're getting old and they're spilling the beans, bump them off. And that's what they're doing. They've been doing that for 10 years. And it's when you start putting it all together, it's really spooky. And it really makes you mad. But you can't do anything about it. And that's the problem. I sat in. I was conducive with three or four congressional and Senate inquiries in the past that would actually have impeached two different presidents, no, three. Three different presidents would have been impeached if there was any way to do it. But they have such a control on by corruption in Washington that it doesn't happen. I sat in front of the chief legal counsel for the House Foreign Affairs Committee for the United States Congress. I gave him 100 pages of documentation that was enough to impeach two presidents with one swipe relative to the old October surprise investigation of criminality, treasonous acts for Reagan and Bush and Bill Casey with the CIA to steal the election away from Jimmy Carter. The 1980 election, I had the documentation enough myself. I presented and chief counsel sat there with me, and he got into the numbers of people that had been killed to keep them quiet from that investigation alone. And I was giving him a list of names, and I got stuck. It was just off the top of my head, and I couldn't think. And he finished the list for me. And he said, I don't like to believe in conspiracies, but I don't believe in 5,000 coincidences. He says, I don't believe in that many coincidental acts. And he said, you're right. They've all been murdered, and I know it. This is the legal counsel for the Foreign Affairs Committee. And, by the way, I will say this. When they finished that investigation, which was in 89, and it was relative to the election of 80, that's how long it took to try to get it to the investigation on that. And by the time it came out and was finished, they printed all of my material that I had supplied, the documentation, on a white page in the report, and it was classified secret. The information that the toy manufacturer had delivered to Washington, D.C., everything I had in my possession was classified secret. So you can't go anyplace. Sonny Bono and I worked together for 9 months. I supplied information on a major investigation connecting the CIA and presidential seats into drug smuggling and assassinations. And I had supplied him with everything necessary myself. Now, he had two or three other sources, but mine was primary. They called me in December after almost a year. They had it 8 months, 9 months, something like that, along with two other congressmen. He called me and they said, we're going to have the investigation finally. I have subpoena powers on the congressional inquiry, which, by the way, they don't do that, because that means that at the congressional level, they're going to be able to force people to testify up there, or if they don't, and they pull this, I can't remember, or I don't want to say, they do anything like that, they're going to go into jail until they talk with the subpoena power. They blew me away, and they said, this was in December of 97, I guess, 96, December of 96, I guess it was, and he said, when we come back from the Christmas holidays, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we're going to have it. We're going to begin. Can you get into Congress? Can you get in to be here when it's ready? He was talking to me in my home at that time in Los Angeles, and he says, and I said, let's do it. I've been working on this thing for a year. Greatest thing I ever heard, that we're actually going to be able to nail these guys. Let's do it. 5 days, 10 days later, I got the telephone call. Sonny was dead on the ski slopes. They had murdered Sonny Bono to stop that investigation. Now, if they had waited 10 days, it was literally 15 days. He was like 4 days. He would have, if he's still alive, he would have been back in Washington to begin that investigation. All right? And the bottom line was, if they had let him start that inquiry, they had let him start that investigation, they couldn't have stopped it, you see, once it was going. They had to stop it with him, and they killed him. He was pistol-whipped on the top of the mountain at the ski resort, dragged up against a tree to make it look like he had run into the tree. And he's dead. End of story. I worked with Sonny's mother, her attorney, worked with them for several months after his death. It took us a long time for even his mother to get the autopsy report. She couldn't even get it. Once we got it, I went over it. It's laughable because the very first two paragraphs as much as explains that, in fact, something was wrong and he was probably murdered. The autopsy completely for the most part, verifies that Sonny would have to have been hit over the head, probably with a barrel of a pistol, 9mm or a 45 pistol, hit a couple times by a left-handed guy facing him, hitting him on the right side of his head and killing him, and make it look like a ski accident.
Do you have, and I'm just asking this because of what you said, do you actually have a copy of the autopsy report?
Oh, absolutely. And bits and pieces of it are in, I did a report on the murder of Sonny Bono. That's available at my website. I did a complete report on it. And here's the problem. The sheriff down there who signed off on accidental ski accident cause of death, believe it or not, he is still the sheriff. And down there, the sheriff is the guy that oversees all autopsies.
Right.
So he of course, when I contacted him, and I contacted Sarah Wecht and some of these other guys that were he's the guy that did the Kennedy expose and all
out
that
of Pittsburgh,
on the shooting.
Yeah. Out of Pittsburgh,
right.
Yep. I know him, by the way.
And I sent him a copy of my thing, and he said it absolutely looks that's what it was. But the problem, I even contacted the guy that did the autopsy, and his response was contact the sheriff.
Hmm.
But the sheriff's the guy, the key guy. I mean, it's ridiculous, as a matter of fact. Sonny was good enough to have been an instructor on skis, for crying out loud. He was so good. He was great, for crying out loud. And all of it, all the medical autopsies, everything else, nothing fits at all. And there was blood on the back of his jacket that went through three layers of clothing, and there was not a single wound near his back. Well, where did that blood come from? It was probably two people that killed Sonny. One that grabbed him and held on to his arms, while the other one hit him in the head a couple of times and killed him. Period.
To make it look like that. To make it look like blood force trauma from a tree.
Oh, you better. But it's even impossible. He still had the skis on. He still had both his ski poles on his hands, and his hands reflected that he did not put his hands up to protect us from running into the tree. Had no bruises. And his glasses, his goggles, ski goggles, and his hat disappeared. They vanished. His nose was not smashed or cut or anything. If he had hit it head first, hard enough to kill himself, there's a multitude of problems. One of them is called the contra coup damage to the brain, which is when you're run into, if your head hits the windshield in a car, your brain bounces, and you always have damage on the back part of your brain from the bouncing. If you are struck with an element on the front of your forehead to kill you, there will not be that damage on the back of your brain, because your brain will not bounce from that. And in Sonny's case, it indicated he was hit with something. He did not run into a tree at 40 miles an hour, which, by the way, where he did hit the tree, according to the report, you can't go 40 miles. It's impossible, because it was off of the ski run, 200 feet inside the woods. All right? So you can't go fast enough. I mean, it's mind-boggling. When you go over the autopsy, it's laughable from a technical point of view. It is no way that you can come to that conclusion by looking at the autopsy. His neck did not even have any injury to his neck whatsoever.
Wow.
Supposedly,
no, that's significant.
It's all significant. That's the problem. The blood on the back probably was not his. It's impossible for it to be his. The blood had soaked, what there was on the back of his jacket had soaked through three layers of clothing, including his jacket, down to his underwear, all right, his undershirt. And he did not have a single wound close to the back of his body whatsoever. So
wow.
It was the nose the nosebleed from the guy he was wrestling with. That's
okay.
Where the blood came from.
That makes a lot of sense, facial nosebleeds. Yeah, you get a pooling, and you certainly
absolutely
can go through fabric.
He was holding on to Sonny. Sonny was wrestling, got the guy a nosebleed, but then they ended up overpowering him, hit him two or three times. His head, where the injury was for his head, ended up actually being, it's described as being a curvature of the dimension. The measurement is given in there exactly in centimeters, where he was hit by the barrel of a gun. You cannot get indented curvature in your skull from running into a tree. And when the dimensions measures out about the size of the diameter of the barrel of a gun, a pistol.
Yeah, the only way you could do that is if the gun was lodged in the tree.
You have to understand what I'm saying. In other words, they said he hit a tree. You don't get a curvature in the front of your above your right eye in two positions that fits the size of a 45 caliber pistol running into a 24 inch tree.
The magic gun theory, as opposed to
the magic tree theory. There was also a log down in front of the tree where he had run into that would have prevented him from striking the tree. If his skis would have hit the log first, and that would have been three feet, 18, 24 inches before he even got to the tree. So that's another incongruent. And I, by the way, have film footage of the location with the blood on the tree and everything in my report. And that was that has been the most frustrating investigation I've ever carried out, because I put together everything sufficient to require a reopening of that investigation, and because of the sheriff down there, and of course, you know, all the local people, everybody down there in that Nevada area, they're all taken care of, and I can't go anyplace with it. And
I'm looking at your website on your catalog section, DVD number 8, okay, Destiny Denied, the murder of Congressman Sonny Bono. So evidence presented to the courts, the autopsy reports, forensic errors, clothes missing, etc. Interesting that you've got this in DVD format. I got to tell you, I'm going to have to order that, okay? I'm interested. I want to see what you got on this.
You got to get it. When you see it, you go. And by the way, out of respect for Sonny, I didn't put all of it, but I do have the entire autopsy and all the rest of that, what have you. It's outrageous. It really bothers me. And of course, one of the reasons it bothers me is because a good deal of the reason for him being killed was the material that I had supplied him. And that's also in there. The report that I gave Sonny himself passed on to him that really made him crazy was the, let's see how we have it. I'm trying to remember which title it's under. Drugs and the CIA, wherever that is on there.
That's number four.
Drugs, the CIA, and government corruption. Basically, that was the report itself that I gave to Sonny. He freaked out. You know, a lot of people don't know because a lot of people are too young to be aware of it. But when they investigated the Waco shootings and all of that business that went on during Janet Reno being the district attorney and all the rest, when they did the Texas Waco murders and all, when Sonny sat in on that inquiry, he literally broke into tears and cried because he saw the video where they had kept people from running out of the building. They were shooting at them when they came out because the building was on fire, had been set on fire by the government. And then when they came out, with the fire going. When they ran out, they were shooting him. So Sonny himself was he was one guy, one thing that had that was moral. Forgetting whatever rock and roll background he had, but could not be bought, could not be paid off. He had nothing in his past where he could be blackmailed, and so he was a problem for the guys in Washington. He wouldn't keep his mouth shut. Most of the guys are told, you know, hey, shut up, and we'll take care of you. Keep your mouth shut. We'll do this, and or we have this on you, and this with this lady or with this thing or that thing, and so they can blackmail a lot of them. But the 'cause it's hard to get into the government up there, hard to get into the Congress if you're not criminally oriented. I was the candidate for the United States Congress in Orlando. I ran on the Democratic ticket, running immediately 1990, and it was interesting because I didn't have any money. The amount of money defending me, trying to keep me from winning the seat, was three times what I had to spend. They spent tons and tons of money compared to the money that I had, and I got within 9 percentage points of winning the seat. The Democratic Party came to me after the election and said if I would hang around and do it again in 2 years, that they would give me full support, because they didn't. They thought I didn't have a chance, and I came within 9 percentage points. And, of course, and I was told, as a matter of fact, by Senator John Kerry, the present Secretary of State, I was told by his office that it was a real good likelihood that I actually had won that seat, because in Florida they had so many of the fraudulent voting booths, electronic fraudulent booths, that they were aware of, that the chances are that if I had gotten within 9 percentage points, it's a good likelihood that I actually had won it, but there was no way to prove that. But that came out of John Kerry's office himself, actually.
Very interesting.
After the race. And,
wow.
Well, they had the electronic. Matter of fact, this still exists all over the country. The electronic booths that they want to fix. They set the computer chip that will kick over every fifth. Let's say in my case, I was a Democrat running against a Republican, and not that I was necessarily oriented one way or another, but that was the way it was set up, because the guy I was going against was a Republican. So I ran as a Democrat. But the booths are set up, the electronic machines are set where they want to do the steal votes. It's set up to where every fifth one on one hand, let's say you're a Democrat, you're voting Democrat, every fifth one when you punch it would automatically go on as a Republican, or vice versa, depending on who was doing the setup. Every fifth vote would be fraudulently transferred to the other guy, and you would never know, and it doesn't show up. It would flash in front of you, you know, that you got, you know, you voted for your guy, whoever it was. But in fact, every fifth one would go over. That equals about 20%. It's usually enough to win a race no matter what. And in my case, obviously, within 9 percentage points, that would have made the difference. And they actually told me on the telephone that it's a good likelihood that was what went on.
Very interesting.
And what was interesting, and I'll tell you this only because John Kerry, now being the Secretary of State, he said to them, they said, "You, what would you have done if you had gotten up here?" Because they already knew me for several years of doing all the stuff that I had done. And I actually testified and supplied John Kerry with drug-proof evidence and documentation on a lot of stuff at their request. During the 80s. And he said, "What would you have done if you had gotten up here?" And I said, "Well, one thing is for sure. I really would have been a pain in the," and I said, you know, I would have been a real pain. And one of the greatest responses I ever got from one of those people was, He said, "I got news, Bob. You are already considered to be a big pain in the A." So, and I said, "Well, thank you very much." I said, "Then I've accomplished something," and that was in 1990.
Very interesting.
Any more questions?
Well, I'll tell you what, you've succeeded, Bob Fletcher of BobFletcherInvestigations.com. You've succeeded in really taking us the entire path of our program. So we've only got about 3 minutes left. You know what? Your closing thoughts, I mean, anything, anywhere you want to go in 3 minutes,
yes,
close it out.
Okay, and let me do that, and I appreciate that. I'm glad you said that. As I said earlier, with this Nibiru situation, I truly hope that I am wrong. This is a loser-loser for me because if I'm wrong, well then in 3 years down the road and nothing's even happened, well then I'm the biggest fool in town. Okay, and if I'm right, there's not going to be a lot of people around to pat me on the back and say, "Boy, I'm glad you told us about that." So it's a lose-lose for Bob Fletcher. But the bottom line is this. If people ask me, assuming that this is going to happen, you know, and it's an unknown as to how serious it may or may not be when this thing comes around. We don't know if it'll be just catastrophic, which is what they think it is going to be, the bad guys. Or if it's just going to be minimally bad, it is going to screw up all the satellites. I want everybody to know that. I didn't mention that. It'll take all of that. It'll be out before it gets here. Although by the time it's close enough to affect all the satellites, which is going to blow our electricity seriously bad, before that happens, we'll know about it. It won't take too long after that for the rest of the problem. All right, but people ask me, what do they do? And I have to say this, this from the bottom of my heart, because I have family on both the coasts, and basically, don't change your life at all. You live your life as a good Christian or whatever your religion is. Live your life being respectful of other people. Do the best you can. Carry on as you are, like you know nothing about it, other than it may be a good idea to. I have survival foods and I have a generator and a few things. I don't even know if it's going to be any good to me, but I have it. But don't think in terms of worrying about it, because nobody can do anything about it at all, and you can't. Except to pray and watch over your own loved ones. That's it. You don't tell your kids, don't go out today because a big truck might hit you out in the street. You don't tell your kids not to go to school because the school might burn down. All right? Those are things that you have nothing to no control over. Don't do anything stupid or foolish. But I think you should know what is apparently on the horizon. And these people are protecting themselves with our money. That makes me mad. But we can't do anything about that either because they've already got that. They have the checkbook and the pen, and none of us have it. So God bless everybody. Mm-hmm. And drop me a note if you're not on the computer. Drop me a note. I'll send you a catalog. And those of you on the computer, go on, look at it, and if you want to know the whole thing, it is on the DVD.
Very good, Mr. Fletcher. I'll tell you, we are absolutely out of time, but I'll say this. I would recommend everyone go to BobFletcherInvestigations.com. That's BobFletcherInvestigations.com. And look, all the information's up there. And by the way, for outside of the DVDs, you've got a lot of information up there, a lot of photographs about the underground bases. Very interesting, the tunnels. Very good information. And I really appreciate your time on the program tonight. Both Joe and I do. And man, God bless you, my friend. Thanks for hanging in there. I know your time's valuable, and I know that you're that's tough for you.
I'm getting to be an old man, so I'm not the old gray mare's not what it used to be. But God bless you all.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fletcher. Thank you so much for your appearance. That'll do it for us tonight, folks. Until tomorrow. Ted Brewer tomorrow night. God bless. Stay safe.